Welcome to Horticulture Hangover on News Radio KLBJ. You're in the right place to get answers to all of your questions about your lawn, garden, trees, and more. Now, here's your host, Colleen Dieter.
Good morning, everyone. This is Colleen Dieter. I'm a landscape consultant with ATXGardens.com. It's too early. What are you doing up? Go back to bed. I'm just kidding. Oh, well, maybe you're up early because you're so excited about another gorgeous spring day. And I've been enjoying this spring so much, and I have been kind of making notes about which plants are doing well this year. And I made a blog post that you can read at atxgardens.com. Click on blog with a picture of my yard from a few weeks back with a grass called Texas bluegrass that started blooming a few weeks ago and is still blooming, and some Dutch irises. And I think someone texted me last week asking about spring bulbs, and I recommended Dutch irises. So I posted this photo of my Dutch irises, and they're lovely. So check that out. It's been a very good year for all the irises, I think, particularly the Dutch irises. And let's see, I've already got a text message from some early bird. Let's see what it says here. Okay, the text says, is diatomaceous earth good for getting rid of ants that nest in outdoor plant pots? If not, how do I keep them out? Love your show and look forward to it every Saturday morning. Aw, thank you. Love that. Thanks for listening. Yes, diatomaceous earth is a good option for keeping ants out of your plant pots. That's a great option to sprinkle that around the area on top of the pot and around the area where the ants are. It makes them uncomfortable. And that's a great option. Diatomaceous earth, for those of you who are new gardeners, is a powder that is made out of basically fossils from these little organisms called diatoms. And at a microscopic level, it's like broken glass. It's sharp. But to us humans, it's just powdery. And so for tiny insects like ants, it irritates them or cuts them up. And can keep them away. So you can make kind of barriers around plants as needed with diatomaceous earth. Another thing I always do with my pots is I'll put a piece of window screen over the hole in the bottom of the pot. And then the ants can't get in from the bottom, at least. And that really seems to deter them really well. I don't think they go up and over very often. I think they prefer to get in through the bottom. So getting some window screen, little piece of window screen, and putting that, cutting it up with scissors and putting it in the bottom of the pot is helpful. And you can buy rolls of window screen, or some of the hardware stores sell it in bulk, which is nice. So you can just buy one little piece of it, like a foot. And so thanks for that great question about ants and pots. And here's another early bird texting with more compliments. Okay, look forward to your program each week. Is there anything I can do to stop more of this happening? From Tia. Thanks, Tia. Okay, Tia sent a picture of a plant that I wanted to talk about this week anyway, which is a canna lily That's C-A-N-N-A, the canna lily, which is one of my favorites. They're so easy to grow and add so much to the garden. They're really great for narrow spaces. But they will get these holes in them sometimes. They get eaten. So that's the one downside of canna lilies. They get eaten by caterpillars and grasshoppers. And I can't remember which one does that thing where they kind of roll up the leaf at night and then chew through it, and it'll make like matching holes. Kind of like when you make a snowflake out of paper, paper snowflake, with scissors, and you cut holes in it and it comes out in a pattern. It's a little bit like that. They roll up the leaf and eat one hole through the whole thing. So it makes multiple holes next to each other. So there's not much you can do to prevent that from happening. Unfortunately, that's just part of having canna lilies, because you can't really stop an insect that you can't see. So when that happens, I just, you know, wait for the plants to grow a little bit more, and then I cut those leaves off. I actually think it looks kind of cool because of how geometric it is, but I know I am unusual in that way. So that's just one of the things about canna lilies, and I know a lot of people don't like canna lilies for that reason, because they get eaten, they get ratty leaves sometimes, but I still really like them, and I'll just periodically, maybe once a month, go out there and cut off all of the ratty leaves that have holes and look raggedy. And they grow so fast, they come right back. So not really any prevention you can do. You can make sure that you've got a good balanced ecosystem in your garden so that you have lots of birds visiting, so that the birds will eat some of the insects. But it's kind of inevitable with canna lilies that they're going to get some holes in them. So thanks for those great questions, and thank you for the compliments and for listening to the show. My loyal listeners know that I thrive on compliments. And speaking of loyal listeners, today is my 1-year anniversary being on the radio. Yay! I'm getting applause from the producer booth. Thank you. So, yeah, I forgot till right now. I started last year about this time. So here I am. I made it a year. Enjoying it very much. And I want to thank y'all for listening. And I thought that I wouldn't be able to get up early for a whole year on Saturdays, but I have been doing it, and it's been okay. It's worthwhile. I'm enjoying coming and talking to y'all. So thanks for sticking with me. It's a lot of fun. So let's see. And then someone else texted up next, another early bird who, this is somebody who is a very special person. I'm going to read this text message. It says, "Canna lilies are religious plants because they're holy." Okay, so this is a very special person who's able to wake up early and make extremely corny jokes. So thank you. Thank you for that, for making me laugh when I'm very sleepy. So they're holy. Okay. Whew. Thank you for that. All right. Thank you for that. Here's another person. Everybody's really getting to it this morning. Okay. I'm going to read this one and see if I have time to answer it. We might have to go to break, but it says, "Good morning, Colleen. I have part of my lawn that has been under sheet mulch since fall, so it's ready for planting. I want to put out seeds. Can I put the seeds out on the mulch, or do I need to put some soil on the mulch first? I have put bluebonnet seeds on mulch, and they have sprouted and grown like crazy, but bluebonnets are Texas tough. I am not sure about other plants. Thanks for spending your Saturday mornings helping us for a whole year. Oh, and that's my maybe number one fan, Stephen Leander. Thanks, Stephen Leander, for texting me on my anniversary. So yeah, I'm going to take a minute here and explain sheet mulching to our listeners. And then if I have time, then probably after the break, I'll answer the whole question. So for those of you who don't know, sheet mulching is when you are trying to kill existing vegetation to make a new planting bed. So you cut down the existing plants like grass, usually grass, you know, cut it down real low, and then you put layers of cardboard or paper, like newspaper or craft paper, on top. And then you put some compost and leaves or other kinds of mulch on top of that. And then you let it sit for several months. And Steve did the right thing. Doing it in the fall to prepare for spring planting is awesome. You really have to let it sit for at least a month. Longer is better. And then you can come back, and if you're planting transplants, not seeds, if you're planting plants, you know, not seeds, come in and you scooch the mulch out of the way, cut a hole in the cardboard, plant the plant, and then you kind of scooch everything back. So, Steve, I'll answer your question after our 8:15 break.
This is Horticulture Hangover with Colleen Dieter. Call or text your lawn and garden questions to 512-836-0590.
Okay, we're back, y'all. Thanks for listening this morning. I'm going to go back to the text message question I got from Stephen Leander about whether or not you can plant seeds on top of the mulch, or if you have to dig down under the mulch. And I'm glad to hear that you had success putting bluebonnet seeds on top of the mulch. That's pretty cool. I just planted some aster seeds that Leah gave me. Y'all might remember my friend Leah, who used to be on the show with me last year, and she gave me some aster seeds that I planted in a sheet mulch area, and I went ahead and I moved a little bit of mulch out of the way. I just wanted to plant two little spots with them. So I moved the mulch out of the way, and I tore up a piece of the cardboard, and I loosened up the soil underneath, and I planted the seeds that way. Aster seeds are really, really small, and I used leaf mulch on top of the cardboard, so the leaves, they're just tree leaves, so I felt like the aster seeds probably wouldn't be able to sprout in that. So I think it really depends on what type of seeds you're planting and what type of mulch you used. If you used like a compost chunky kind of mulch or mulch that's real fine, you probably could plant seeds right into that. But the bottom line is seeds, any little tiny seed that's sprouting, you know, needs to have contact with some kind of soil or media that will hold some water. Like a sponge, you want it to be like a spongy texture, whatever it is. That's going to hold some water like a sponge and then be soft enough that the little root that comes out of the seed can get down into that sponge. So I think it really depends on the type of seed and what you mulched with. If you're trying to do like a whole big area, you might just try both, some on top and some below, because I'm not really sure. I haven't done a whole lot of seed planting into sheet mulching. So I'm usually planting plants. And speaking of seed planting, I got a question last week toward the end of the show that I didn't get to answer. That is, what wildflower seeds can we plant in spring? And I didn't have time to answer it last week. So that's a fun question, because it's funny because it's hard to remember to plant wildflower seeds in the fall when it's time for a lot of wildflower seeds in the fall because they're not blooming at that time. But if you think about the life cycle of wildflowers, it kind of makes sense. You know, they're blooming right now and they're going to get pollinated by insects or by the wind. And then they're going to make seeds where the flowers were. And then those, you know, little seeds take a while to ripen on the plant. That can take all summer. And so really by the end of the summer, that's when the plants naturally start letting go of the seeds that they made from the flowers that are blooming now. So that's why wildflower planting season is usually in the fall. But it's hard to remember to do it then because they're not blooming. And so we're all thinking about wildflowers right now in the spring because they're blooming right now. But there are some that you can plant in the spring. And so last week after the show, I looked up my favorite wildflower seed company is called Native American Seed out in Junction, Texas. Wonderful family-owned business. And they have a mix that's called Plant in Spring or Fall. And that's really cool. So I'll direct y'all there if you're interested in planting wildflower seeds now for blooms later. Get the Native American Seed mix. It's called Plant in Spring or Fall. And I looked up some of the species in that mix. They have one of my favorites. It's Monarda fistulosa. That's a type of bee balm. Monarda fistulosa. They have green threads that I really love too. Those are the little yellow flowers that grow along the side of the road a lot. Coreopsis. Cut leaf daisies, and they're also known as Engelmann's daisy, which is just a really good one. That's one that I just want to grow, not even as a wildflower, but even as a garden plant, because the whole plant is really attractive. They have pink evening primrose in there, which are an unstoppable force once you get them. You have to really make sure you really want them. And wine cups, perennial wine cups. So those are some of the species in that mix that stood out to me if you wanted to try individuals. So those are ones that will come up in the spring too. So that's pretty cool. But make a note on your calendar. Really, so much of successful gardening is about being kind of organized. Make a note on your calendar if you loved seeing bluebonnets this spring and you want to make a spot in your on your property for bluebonnets, make a note to buy some bluebonnet seeds in August and plant them in September or October. Okay. Same thing with fruit trees. If you're, enjoying seeing the blossoms on peach trees and you're looking forward to getting some fruit, make a note on your calendar to plant a peach tree in December, because that's the time. All right, it's not time now. All right, now we've got a call from John in East Austin. Good morning. Good morning, John. You're on the air.
Good morning. How are you doing?
Good. How are you today?
I'm doing good. Can't complain.
Good.
Yeah, at least. I've been in landscaping professionally for about 13 years now.
Yeah.
So I just wanted your take on this opinion.
Okay.
Leaf pickup.
Hmm.
Everyone says, you know, everyone picks up their leaves. Everyone bags their leaves every year. You see the bags on the street. Now, I know as a landscaper, it's healthier to keep those leaves on the lawn and just mulch them.
Yeah.
Is that your take as well? And do you think it's purely an aesthetic thing that people are wanting their leaves picked up because the neighbor's yard is clean? I want my yard clean. What is something we can do to, as a professional landscaper, it's hard to convince homeowners to leave leaves in their yard.
Yeah.
What's something other than promising them that their yard's going to be more beautiful that we can help push that along? Because
yeah.
You know, landscapers, we'll all tell you, we hate picking up leaves. We hate it. It's dusty. It's nasty.
Yeah. It's loud.
So if we could get the word mm-hmm. out, that the best thing to do is, yeah, it might be an eyesore for a couple months.
Yeah.
But just wait till spring and your yard will be beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's see. So, you know, for me, being a landscape consultant, it's interesting because people are coming to me for advice. They want to be educated, you know, and so trying to educate the customers to let them know that the leaves are going to decompose and create food for the plants. You know, you might even make like a worksheet kind of thing to give to people. I used to save articles that I would read in magazines and stuff like that to give to customers to say, like, I'm not making this up. Like, this is for real. Like, the leaves are beneficial. They're going to break down. They're going to feed the plants. You know, they're going to provide shelter for butterflies and lightning bugs and all kinds of insects that need leaf cover to go through their life cycle. They're gonna, you know, it's basically free mulch. And that usually sure. was the thing that persuaded people, was like, I tell people, like, it's really bad for the plants and the soil to have bare soil in the yard. Okay. Like, bare soil is not okay. So either I can remove the leaves and you can buy mulch and we'll put mulch over it, or we can keep the leaves. So, but John, I've got to go to a break. Thank you so much for your call.
Welcome to Horticulture Hangover on News Radio KLBJ. You're in the right place to get answers to all of your questions about your lawn, garden, trees, and more. Now, here's your host, Colleen Dieter.
Good morning, everyone. This is Colleen Dieter with ATXGardens.com. I'm a landscape consultant, and I wanted to follow up on the question that John had on the phone about leaving leaves on the ground, tree leaves, when they fall. Because someone else texted and said, well, what about, they said, I have a landscaper that lives down the street from me and told me that's the worst thing, to let those leaves stay in your yard year after year. That ultimately puts a layer on top of the dirt underneath the grass and causes your grass to die. So yeah, if you have turf grass, for sure, if you're growing a lawn, turf grass lawn, then you need to remove the leaves from the grass for sure. So, and that could be just mowing over them and chopping them up into smaller pieces and allowing them to decompose after they're chopped up. That's really good to do. Sometimes, though, we have so many leaves, or the type of leaf is so thick and leathery or waxy, that they don't really get chopped up by the mower. And then in that case, you need to rake them or bag them, because you don't want them piling up on turf grass, because they will they will eventually pile up and prevent light from getting to the grass. So it's a little bit different in the case with turf grass. Okay. So, but we're talking about, if we're talking about a flower bed area, then it is best to leave as many tree leaves as you can stand. Because there's insects that will go through their life cycle as babies in those leaves. The leaves do eventually decompose and feed all the plants. They create healthy soil as they decompose. That's really important for the plants. And the leaves really allow more air and water through than typical wood mulch. So it's really an aesthetic thing, and people feel like it looks nice and clean if there's no leaves in the beds. It's just a convention, and we can change conventions. And the leaves are really the best thing. really the best thing to do is to shred the leaves if you can. It's a lot of extra work. But if you can pick up the leaves and shred them and then put them back down, that's good, because then they don't blow around and it looks nicer. But, you know, if you're a butterfly gardener or any kind of wildlife gardener, you would just leave the leaves alone as much as you can. So I appreciate that question very much. It's very important to me. I just read an article in Butterfly Magazine, American Butterfly Magazine, about how important it is to leave as many leaves as you can, and to protect all those little insects. And so now we've got a call from Bob in Lakeway. Good morning, Bob.
Good morning, Colleen. I've got a question about pruning tomatoes. Oh, so I grew tomatoes from seed in the beginning of January. I actually put them in the ground in February 10th.
Oh, wow.
I know that's early. But during the nights when it would become less than 45 degrees, I'd put buckets on top along with incandescent Christmas lights to keep them warm.
Okay.
Anyway, they've been going nuts. I've been eating tomatoes every day, cherries. Cherries.
Whoa.
Of course. Yeah, and they're great. When I just put them in the ground and after the first couple of weeks, I did prune them, at least the indeterminate ones. My question is, now these things are now like 4 feet high, and the leaves are really packing into they're just thriving. They're packing into the tomato cages. Should I still be trying to prune so that the leaves can get sun and air, or just let them pile on top of each other, the ones that get the sun work and the ones that don't die? In the past, I've never done it, and they just turn brown and die, the internal ones.
Yeah.
But I was wondering if I should be continuing to prune now as they're just taking over the place.
Yeah, it's important to continue pruning through the whole season if you can. I never did that because I'm a lazy gardener, but the really good tomato growers do to keep taking off the side shoots so that you just have the one central kind of stem coming up, and that's the only one making fruit and the only one with leaves is you're removing the side shoots. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, just about all the ones that I've got are indeterminate. So there's several main, you know, like Juliet,
mm-hmm.
Which are, you know, there's several main shoots.
Mm-hmm.
But the tomatoes do just grow off of those main shoots.
Mm-hmm.
And so I guess I could be taking off the sides.
Mm-hmm.
I assume all those extra leaves aren't really needed. Is that true?
Yes, it's kind of true. It's like if you... over time, the plant is healthier if you continue pruning and taking off the side shoots, but you do get less fruit. So you'll get less fruit in the short term, but a longer tomato season in the long term if you keep pruning them, because they're going to get better airflow and better light penetration. So that's going to help prevent diseases and bugs from getting in there. And in May and June, when it starts getting really, really humid here, that's the time when we usually start seeing a lot of tomato pests. And so if you can keep them pruned, it'll be better for them in May and June.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I think I'll try that. You know, it just dawned on me, I've got a lot of tomato plants, and what I can do is prune some and not others and see how it turns out.
I love that experiment. Yes. Do the experiment and see if it, what it's worth to you.
Yep. I'll do it. It'll be fun.
All right, Bob. Good, yeah, and then call me back and let me know how it goes.
Yeah, I will.
Okay, awesome. Thanks, Bob.
Bye.
So, yeah, y'all, it's tomato time. It's so fun, and that's so cool that Bob's got tomatoes that early. I have one tomato plant. I gave up growing tomatoes pretty much. I felt like I don't have the dedication needed for tomatoes in Texas. I don't have the attention to detail necessary. They take up so much room in the garden and they need so much, and then the raccoons just eat them. So I stopped. But this year, my friend Megan, who works up at Hill Country Water Gardens, she was growing some rare tomatoes, dwarf types. So she had some extras that she grew from seed, and I got one and put it in a pot. And it was doing okay, but now it's got some really weird symptoms. I think it has a virus. So, again, I'm thwarted by tomatoes. It's not my thing, but I know all about them because I learned it all the hard way. So, good on you, Bob, for sticking with it. It's its whole own hobby. Okay, so it's 8:45. We're going to go to a break.
This is Horticulture Hangover with Colleen Dieter. Call or text your lawn and garden questions to 512-836-0590.
Good morning. We're back. This is Colleen Dieter with the Horticulture Hangover Show. I am a landscape consultant at atxgardens.com. And I got a nice text message that says, Colleen, I mulch mine. This is referring back to the phone call that we got from the landscaper in East Austin asking about whether or not you should leave your leaves on the ground. It says, Colleen, I mulch mine. Run over several times to grind up smaller. Any heavier after fine mulching, I bag to place in compost. Done this for years, no issues. From Jeffrey in Southwest Austin. Thanks, Jeffrey. That's great. Yeah, running over the leaves on your turf grass with the lawnmower, or even running them over to chop them up to use in the flower beds too, is great. And then if they're still too thick after you run them over with the lawnmower, like Jeffrey in Southwest Austin said, pick those up and put them in the compost. That's great. Thanks, Jeffrey, for sharing that actually works. All right. Let's see. I got some pictures of tomatoes from our caller earlier. He said, some pics of my tomatoes. Thanks, Colleen, for your advice on pruning. Boy, those tomatoes look delicious. Thanks for sharing. Way to go. Love to see that. Love to see those garden victories. That's great. And then, let me see here. Got a few more texts coming in. This is someone who is asking, do you recommend a seaweed drench or foliar spray? And if so, how often during the year? Yeah, I do like seaweed. I don't always get around to it, but for really dedicated gardeners, doing a seaweed drench or foliar spray, either way, whatever's easier for you. drenching or foliar spray. And four times a year is great. You can do it up to once a month. Really. So the plants just eat it up. All right. Now we've got a question from Joey in South Austin. Good morning, Joey.
Good morning. Not so much a question, but a bit of a humble brag.
All right.
On the leaf discussion that's been going all morning, I bag my leaves off the mower, and then I throw them in with the chickens in the chicken coop.
Uh-huh.
About every 2 or 3 weeks, you rake them up into a big pile, and then the girls will knock them all down, and after about 4 months, it's done, and you put it in a finishing pile for a month, and then it's ready to go right back on the lawn when the next series of oaks are about to shed every 6 months. It works really good.
Great idea. I love that you got the chickens doing some work for you.
They do all the work for you, and they add a fair amount of nitrogen in there at the same time because, you know, reasons.
Absolutely. Absolutely, Joey. Yeah, thank you so much for sharing that. I'm always recommending poultry compost for top dressing lawns, and if you got your own chickens, that's a great way to do it. You've got a little ecosystem there going, Joey.
Yeah, and there's a side benefit there too, if you like an omelet or two every once in a while.
Absolutely, right? Absolutely. Well, I want to know, do you have a separate pile that you said you have a finishing pile? Do you move it out of the chicken coop then and set it somewhere to finish?
Yeah, you do have to do that. So, because they'll rake it around. We actually have a separate coop and a yard.
Okay.
Although in smaller properties, I used to do this just in the same spot. But you do need to finish it. Because it's pretty heavy in nitrogen, so I make one of those leaf hoop kind of things.
Yes, okay.
And you do have to move it out of the yard.
Okay.
Otherwise, they'll just keep raking it down, and it can't get up to temperature for that finishing cycle, if you know what I mean, on the compost. Because they'll go right after it. They're going after the worms and grubs and doing their thing where they rake it around, but they'll break it. They'll break it down into a fine, nice compost, and it's great.
Right. Okay. Cool, Joey. Thank you so much for your call.
No problem.
All right. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye. Yeah, that's really cool to hear from Joey. You know, that's another way to do it, to recycle those leaves and get some nitrogen into the soil. If you've got chickens, you can create that system. And there's lots of ways to do it, but most gardeners know that leaves are so valuable, and they're really not something to throw away. And if you can recycle them somehow, whether that's just leaving them on the ground in the flower beds, you know, mowing over them in the turf grass areas, composting them, if you have too many, composting them somehow, whether it's in a compost bin or using chickens. These are all great things to do to care for the soil and care for the plants and nurture our homes and nature. So it is hard. It is really hard to change people's minds, you know, as our caller, he called in to ask how to tell his landscaping customers, you know, how to keep the leaves, that keeping the leaves is important, and kind of have to give people information and educate them. And they may not eventually be convinced. And you know, that's when you have to decide as a landscaper, are you going to provide that service or are you going to say, you know what, I'm going to find some customers that agree with me and that actually listen to me. And that's definitely a struggle that I've had, and I know a lot of other landscapers that struggle with that too. Some people are immune to good advice. I got a beautiful picture from my friend Steve and Leander of his bluebonnets that he planted on top of the sheet mulch. My goodness, they look amazing, Steve. That's so beautiful. It's a big mass planting. Thank you so much for sharing that. Okay, then we've got, Here's someone asking a question over text saying, hello, Colleen. I was wondering if I can move a rose bush now. I have a small one that's not doing too well that I would like to move to a different area. Is this okay to do now or should I wait? Oof, that's a good question. And I'd say wait till fall if you can. If it's really suffering because it's in too much shade or something like that, you could risk it and move it now if you think it's not going to live through the summer in its current position. But otherwise, if you can wait till fall, it's better to wait till September. So it's 8:59, and I want to thank you all so much for listening to me this past year, and I'll see you again next week. This is Colleen with ATXGardens.com.